Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show. Lots of interesting people involved in putting it together and performing it for you. And, of course, the host of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. And on today's program, the featured interview will be Carol speaking with former United States Senator Olympia Snow. That's coming up in just a moment. We also will be talking with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who will be interviewing Dr. Susan Abel Lieberman. She's a PhD. She is the co-founder of the Y Collaborative, which focuses on encouraging healthy people to put end-of-life preparations in place long before a healthcare crisis. Steve is also going to talk to us about the fine print in long-term care policies. We'll also be joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who is also the executive editor, the executive vice president and editor of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication in the talk radio industry. And he'll be giving us some behind-the-scenes insights into what's happening in talk radio, a business of stations such as the one you're listening to right now. Okay, let's jump into our first conversation. Carol Marks, front and center, in conversation with United States Senator Olympia Snow, former Republican senator from Maine, who decided not to seek re-election in 2012, citing the excessive partisanship of the Senate as her reason for leaving. She's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress. It's published by Weinstein Books.
Before we talk about your willingness to cross the aisle to get needed legislation passed, let's talk a little bit about your life and what happened to you that helped you develop your political approach about how to get things done. You've had so many overwhelming tragedies in your life. What were some of them, and did they wind up making you a stronger person and help develop your wonderful sense of independence?
Carol, that's an important question, and it was sort of central to the book because it wasn't necessarily a personal memoir, but I thought it was critical to illustrate some of my background and what shaped and influenced my approach that ultimately informed me on my the way in which I addressed questions in the public arena. And I lost my parents when I was young. My mother died when I was 8 from breast cancer, and then the following year my father died from a heart attack. In the meantime, in between those, between the time of my mother's death and my father's death, my father sent me away to a Greek school in New York. So I guess I got my first sense of independence. Even though I wasn't on my own, you know, you sort of feel like you're on your own. And by being sent away to a school, and obviously it gave me the opportunity to, you know, become grounded, you know, in what was important, how to survive, how to make decisions for myself, to develop the confidence and belief in oneself at the same time. So it really did help to shape me because as I tell young people, you shouldn't be afraid to stand alone because I've been there both personally and certainly professionally in public service in both the House and in the United States Senate when I've had to take positions that's counter, you know, to either popular opinion or to my party in particular on issues and where I deviated. And then secondly, I lost my husband at the age of 26. He was serving in the state legislature. Same time he was running his family business, but he was killed in a car accident upon returning home from the legislative session. And so I found myself at a crossroad, and I had to build a life for myself in one sense again. And so I made a decision to run for his seat in a special election with the encouragement of my family, friends, political leaders, because I had been actively involved working for then newly elected Congressman Bill Cohen, who went on to be Senator and Secretary of State, but also I had majored in political science, loved politics, and first thought, before I got married, that I'd come to Washington to work. So it evolved into what it is today, and little could I have known when I made that decision about a special election that
oh,
I would
wow. Be and you know, you
40-year journey.
A wonderful journey. Now, when it comes to the partisan bickering going on in both legislative bodies, does the president also share some blame for Congress losing its way? Because he's largely let it work on its own, and he hasn't taken a, a position the way President Lyndon Johnson did. He really worked actively with its members.
No, that's true, and that has been, you know, part of the problem, because I think there's, you know, obviously there's only one president, and the kind of leadership that he exhibits can make all the difference in influencing the direction of Congress and most critically shaping legislation and fulfilling his own legislative agenda for, you know, on behalf of his administration, but also on behalf of the country. And that didn't happen. In fact, I had, you know, encouraged him when I had my first meeting with him at the White House in late January 2009 about, you know, adopting the model of President Reagan, because he came in under some very difficult circumstances economically and internationally, but he and his team really delved into developing a strong rapport and relationship with the Democratic House of Representatives, which was then led by Speaker Tip O'Neill, and built a coalition between Democrats and Republicans, and I was part of that coalition that led to his eventual legislative successes. And the same was true with President Johnson. Obviously, I wasn't serving that time, but we know what he was able to accomplish because he worked across the political aisle. And that is essential. That relationship that develops between the president and the legislative branch of government is critical to determining really whether or not you can have a successful legislative session.
You are so right. Now, when it comes to women's issues, is it fair to say that women collaborate with each other better in both the Senate and House and their male counterparts, and don't the joint monthly meetings that they have really help to get things done?
It does, and it breaks down the barriers and creates an atmosphere of trust. You know, I mean, it creates an atmosphere of trust and breaks down the barriers from which you can create, I think, an environment of mutual respect and the trust that's necessary, you know, at times in which you're looking for allies on particular pieces of legislation or specific votes, and or building the camaraderie for the future. And that basically is a template for how the entire Congress should be functioning. That was true when I served in the House as co-chair of the Congressional Caucus on Women's Issues on a bipartisan basis with then Democratic Congresswoman Pat Schroeder of Colorado. And the same is true in the Senate, where the women senators meet on a monthly basis, and we talk about everything. It's a free-flowing discussion. There's no pre-planned strategy or agenda. We just have the ability to talk about one another's lives and, you know, what's going on and so forth. But what comes from that is the ability to create fertile ground for a future collaborative effort.
Now, what your book does that's so great is it really points out, you know, why our governing institutions have gotten to the sad place that they're in today. And one of the reasons that you point out, and it makes so much common sense, is, my goodness, they only work 4 days a week. How can they get anything done?
Isn't that the truth? And I've had so many people, you know, recognize, you know, that suggestion. For what it is that why isn't the Congress in 5 days a week? Because really the times demand it, and the legislative issues are so complex, and it's very difficult to get the Congress's attention on these issues and give it the attention they deserve without being there for, you know, a full working week. It doesn't mean to say they're not working, they go home. Obviously they do. But I think you have to have concentrated periods of time in Washington devoted to the mission at hand and the purpose for which members of Congress are elected. And you can't devote that kind of time when you're flying in Monday night for a vote or Tuesday night for a vote, and then you're out on Thursdays and traveling to wherever, whether it's your district, state, or other parts of the country. So I think it's clear that they really have to concentrate on revamping the legislative schedule. Maybe have 3 weeks on and 1 week in your district or your state. But something has to change given the time and the legislation that is desperately needed to be addressed.
Former United States Senator Olympia Snow of Maine in conversation with Carol Marks. More to come. If you are just joining us, she's talking about her new book titled Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress. It's published by Weinstein Books. You can get more information at bipartisanpolicy.org. And as I just mentioned, we'll have more of this conversation between Carol Marks, host of the program, and former U.S. Senator Olympia Snow coming up in just a moment. I also want to mention that if you are new to this program and want to hear some of the best interviews archived and want to know more about the work of Carol Marx, visit our website, atouchofgray.com. Atouchofgray.com has all kinds of information and resources for better living, and as I said, some of the best of the Touch of Gray radio programs still there, archived for you to listen to whenever you want. And a gray is spelled with an E, so it's atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. Coming up later in the program, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine will be joining us, and our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman will be telling us a bit about the fine print in long-term care policies, what to be very careful about when you enter into one of them. That and more coming your way when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're going to get back to that conversation that we've been broadcasting between the host of our show, Carol Marx, and former United States Senator Olympia Snow of Maine. She's been talking about her book, Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress, published by Weinstein Books. And in this part of the discussion, the topics include how we can get things done and filibuster reform. Here now is United States Senator Olympia Snow and Carol Marx.
Now, when it gets to making our legislation that we need to pass so badly in a more transparent way, you mentioned a couple of things, so I wondered if you'd comment on them. You said that we need filibuster reform, a more open amendment process, and the end of secret holes on legislation.
Right, and, you know, it's all fundamental to the Senate. The Senate's a unique institution. It's you know, has very few rules, actually, that govern the legislative body. So because I think that was the design of our founding fathers about the fact that you have a more open, deliberative, slower process by design. That doesn't mean to say that it's constantly a roadblock to the fulfillment of any legislative goals. And so in the filibuster reform, well, it remains to be seen, based on the agreement that was reached just for this session of Congress between the majority and minority leader, as to whether or not it will succeed. Because I think it is important that on our side, on the Republican side, that they don't constantly, you know, be issuing threats or, you know, moving to filibuster pieces of legislation unnecessarily. And then on the other side, the majority response can't always be, we're not going to have amendments, because amendments are important. They are the bridge to building and modifying legislation, and ultimately the consensus is necessary to get beyond this, you know, to get the 60 votes or more to move the legislation forward. So, you know, it does require communication between both majority and minority leader in order for the Senate to function and function well. But it may necessitate having a filibuster reform based on maybe having live filibusters, such as what Senator Rand Paul did recently, for 13 hours, so that there's more transparency and accountability, which gets to the secret hold question, is that constantly, you know, members of the Senate are placing holds, you know, on issues, and there's no transparency. There was change in the rules, but unfortunately, they haven't been enforced to the degree that they should. So all of it, I think, allows the Senate to, you know, perform its duties, but in a way that's consistent with its mission in considering legislation. Amendments are critical, and so they have to get past the idea of having no amendments. And we'll see this week, you know, obviously on immigration reform, probably the really true test of how the Senate will function and perform for the first time in a very long time in all reality, in terms of dealing with legislation. That's the way it should happen, allowing amendments to be offered and allow everybody's voices to be heard.
Well, we're going to be watching that. And you know what, your book really helps because it gives answers on some ways that Congress can be made to do what our founders wanted it to do. And you said the changes must come from the outside, a grassroots movement. How can we develop that critical mass that's going to result in getting things done in Congress?
Well, Carol, you know, it's an important question because that was fundamental to my own decision as well, that I recognized that the political polarization wouldn't be diminished in the short term, and how could it change? How could the dynamics internally change? And that really does require, you know, each of us as citizens, and that's why I not only point out to what things must change, what groups are involved in change, and I'm part of the Bipartisan Policy Center that was co-founded by four former Senate Majority Leaders, two Democrats, Senator Daschle and Senator Mitchell, and two Republicans, Senator Dole and Senator Baker. And, our mission is to help find a way to find that common ground options. And so we have a new website, bipartisanpolicy.org, that's part of the, you know, common ground approach based on, you know, my book, so that people can go to that website. We're trying to create a, you know, the citizens' movement to rally in real-time accountability and part of elected officials, leaders, presidents, rank and file, but also what are the common ground options available to people so they can go to their elected officials and say, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you solving the problem this way? Here are the options. Get it done, because I think that that is essential. For example, on the budget resolution, each House passed it. For the first time, the Senate passed one in 4 years, but they haven't been reconciled between the House and Senate to become law. And so, therefore, they're in a stalemate. Here it is, once again, where the country is not going to have an overall federal budget. It's unacceptable. And so that's why we're trying to find the means to do it in real time, then rewarding those lawmakers or candidates who are willing to work across the political aisle at the ballot box and supporting them financially, which I'm doing through OlympiasList.org. That's what I plan to do, is support candidates on both sides if they're willing to reach across the political aisle and to solve problems and to be involved in the compromises that are so critical to this country.
Former United States Senator Olympia Snowe, in conversation with Carol Marks, talking about a variety of subjects, including her new book titled Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress, published by Weinstein Books. If you'd like more information, you can go to the website bipartisanpolicy.org. That's bipartisanpolicy.org. Coming up later in the program today, Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent, will be talking with Susan Abel Lieberman, Ph.D. She is a co-founder of the Y Collaborative in Houston, Texas, which focuses on encouraging healthy people to put end-of-life preparations in place long before a health care crisis. She's going to talk to Steve Wiseman about her new book titled Death, Dying, and Dessert, Reflections on 20 Questions About Dying, published by Casa de Palabras. And that's coming up. Steve is also going to discuss the fine print and long-term care policies. So we got plenty coming your way when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues on this great talk radio station right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor seat, and this is the point in the program where we talk a bit about the media with our senior correspondent who, like yours truly, has another feather in his cap involved at Talkers Magazine, the trade publication in the talk radio industry. His name is Kevin Casey. He is the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine. It's the place that people who are on the radio and work at radio stations around the country go to find out what's happening in their business. And I guess, Kevin, in the business of talk radio, it's like every other business. This weekend, people are looking forward to next weekend.
Very much so, with a big, I guess, theoretically four-day weekend, with the fourth falling on Thursday.
Yeah, so the good thing about this weekend is, and I'm not a clock watcher, and I'm not a calendar watcher, but I have to tell you, lately, I've been working so hard. And I'm not saying that to, inspire pity on behalf of our listeners or you, but rather to say that it seems everybody who works or is even trying to find work is working harder than they ever have because of the accelerated technology that we live with, that even those of us who don't watch the clock and don't look at the calendar are starting to look forward to four-day weekends.
You're absolutely true, and this is becoming a trend. I mean, those who are working, and, you know, my hat's off to those, my heart goes out to those who are trying desperately to find work in this economy, but those who are working, it's documented, are working more hours, doing more jobs than ever before.
So you look at these kinds of weekends with mixed emotions, like, okay, do you have an excuse to hide from that constant tether, you know, that drone of emails and tweets and texts? And, you know, you can't say the check's in the mail because there's no more of that. Everything is now.
Right.
And people bring their work home with them. Do you look at a four-day weekend as an opportunity to hide from that and get off the grid and relax a little bit? Or do you look at it as, oh, well, I'm just going to work my way through the whole thing like I do weekends anyway? Or, worse yet, do you take off and then realize that you only have a bigger pile to climb out from under when you go back to work on Monday?
Wow. I think that for a lot of folks, because this is such a traditional summer holiday, there's so many outdoor things going on that, first of all, you're pulled away, you're out of the house, there's picnics, stuff like that, parades. I think that it's a different sort of holiday, and people do tend to kind of get away from it all. But I think you're right. I think people do kind of go into Sunday afternoon going, oh, my God, what's going to be on the desk in the morning?
Do you remember when you were a kid that Sunday nights were always sort of like, even though Ed Sullivan was on, Sunday nights were sort of depressing because...
Totally.
I have that feeling lately. Sunday, yeah. Sunday night, like, oh, I got to go back to school. I didn't do my homework. Oh, I didn't do, you know.
The only thing that saves Sunday nights for me is the 4 months out of the year or 3 months out of the year when there's Sunday night football.
Yes.
That's the only thing that delays the depression.
Right, then when that's over, it's, oh, my gosh.
Right, then it's late, and you got to get up early.
All right, well, that being said, for those of you who can empathize or identify at least somewhat with what we just talked about, enjoy the weekend because there's only a three-day week ahead, and then we have another weekend, hopefully. And the good thing about holidays like the 4th of July, Thanksgiving, and Christmas is that almost everybody celebrates them, so you have an excuse to hide and jump off the grid if that's possible. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Kevin Casey is the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine. He's also a senior correspondent on Touch of Gray. If you want to know about what's going on in talk radio, go to talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. More Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, coming your way in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here now for the rest of the way is our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman in conversation with Susan Abel Lieberman, Ph.D., co-founder of the Y Collaborative in Houston, Texas, which focuses on encouraging healthy people to put end-of-life preparation in place long before a healthcare crisis. Her book is titled Death, Dying, and Dessert, Reflections on 20 Questions About Dying, published by Casa de Palabras.
First of all, why the title? All right, I got death and dying, but what does dessert have to do with that?
You know, over 3 years ago, I'd gotten very interested in death and dying as a result of my own mother's decline. And I was part of a group of professional women, and I wanted to talk about this subject. And I said, are any of you interested in getting together over dinner to have this conversation? And not many people raised their hands, but a few did. So we had dinner at my house, and I thought, what am I going to serve for dessert? There's this great iced angel food across town. I'm going to go get one. And I served angel food cake for dessert. Conversation was so good, we did it again. And, of course, you know what I had the second time. I had devil food cake. Somebody said, we should call this group Death, Dying, and Dessert. So we've been having dinner and eating dessert and dealing with a different question around death, dying, and aging for over 3 years. And it's just been such a profoundly positive experience. I think we've all reduced our anxieties, our stress. We've learned from each other. We've cried. We've laughed. We've laughed way more than we've cried. And this book is a recreation of those conversations. So I called it Death, Dying, and Dessert.
Yeah, and it really is, it's very, very readable. Why do you think in our society in particular there's such a taboo about talking about death?
Well, it's interesting. I believe more in this culture than other cultures. First of all, death has become hidden. People used to die in their bedrooms, and now 80% of us die in the hospital. Second of all, you know, we come factory ready to resist death. We're made for living, not for dying. Our language has reinforced the fact that there's something wrong with dying. You know, it's we passed on, or we've gone to a higher power, or we're in a better place, but it's hard for people to say, he died.
Yeah, I like dirt nap. I think that's kind
dirt
of...
Dirt nap?
Right.
That's
yes.
What I haven't
yeah.
heard. You can have a dirt nap. I prefer to just die.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't talk about it. When you go to the hospital, it's depressing. You know, it's not...
Yeah.
This isn't a good way to be. And the rescue system has made death feel like failure. Doctors are trained to save us. So when they don't save us, they feel like they failed. And, you know, we die, we fail too. We get old, we failed. So we're not supposed to do any of those things that developmentally we actually end up doing. And I don't know, you know, there's this national conversation project that Ellen Goodman, the journalist, started. There's been a tremendous amount of talk in the media about the conversation project, which is encouraging people to sit down with their loved ones, their family and friends, and have a conversation. As best I can tell, there's a lot more conversation in the media than there is conversation in living rooms and kitchens.
Yeah.
People are just reluctant.
Interesting.
And
you know, what do you say to the person who takes the sort of nihilist approach of, you know, when I'm dead, nothing's going to matter anyway, so why should I deal with
this? That's Fred, this guy I interviewed. He said, well, Susan, why should I care about this? I'll be dead. Yes, you will be dead, Fred, but there are a lot of people who love you. They won't be dead. They'll be standing around saying, what do we do and what kind of funeral should we have? And then you don't have a will. They'll also be in court because they'll have to go to probate court and spend money because you didn't do it. Or you won't be dead. You'll be in the hospital, ventilated or intubated, unable to speak for yourself, and your children will show up and fight over who gets to decide what should be done. So I think those are pretty good reasons.
Yeah, very good.
Or you
can't
pay your bills and nobody has the password to your computer or is allowed to do it. Just, it's such a mess. If you talk to anybody who has lost somebody they care about and that person was unprepared, they'll tell you, oh my gosh, this was just a mess. It took so much time. It was so difficult. We had to spend so much money. Just don't do it. It's a bad idea.
It's also stressful on the family. One of the other things I do is I'm an estate planning lawyer and lawyer. You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
But one of the
things in my own
family's life, where my parents pre-planned their funeral, and it just made it so much easier, as you say, on the family to not have to be dealing with that at the time. So how do you start that conversation with parents or family members in regard to, hey, you really do need to take steps to deal with your own incapacity?
So the book talks about lots of ways to start, but let me tell you how I did it for myself, and one way that I encourage. Fill out your own paperwork, and then say to your parents, if your parents are reluctant to do it, you fill out the paperwork, and then you can say this to them. Or if your parents say to your children, just been to see my estate attorney, and I filled out some paperwork, and I just would like to go over it with you. Could we have dinner together and sit down? So none of us, one of my sons lives in California, my other son doesn't, and we're there on and off. So we were all going to be in California for my 68th birthday, and I said to my boys, you know, I'm going to tell you what I'd like for my birthday. I'm going to make it easy for you. Oh, great, Mom, what would you like? I'd like an hour's conversation with you about end of life. And you know what they said? Mom, why don't we don't want to do that. You're fine. You're not old. I said, this is what I'm asking for. Will you give this to me? And they went, oh, all right. I said, you're welcome to bring your wives or not. So they came to dinner. Their wives didn't come. We had a really nice dinner, good bottle of wine. We went into the living room. We had an hour's conversation. That was more than enough. I was done. They were done. And at the end of the hour, they said, oh, that was good. Thank you.
Yeah. It's very interesting that people do, once you give them the opportunity, they do appreciate it. You've got
What you said is really true. They might come reluctantly, but they leave grateful.
You have a great chapter in there called Can Death Be Funny? Now, I know maybe to Woody Allen, but what's your thought on that?
You know, death can be funny. Life is funny, and death is part of life. So this is a story in the book, but it's one of my favorites. A friend of mine's daughter had bone marrow cancer. Lives in Houston. She was in New York. In New York, she had this awful surgery where you're isolated and they take out all your bone marrow. She thought she was fine. She went back to work. And after some months, it came back and she realized she wasn't fine and she was going to die. So she came home to Houston, and it was a very difficult time as she slowly declined. And she came down to the kitchen one morning and she said to her mother, oh, my heavens, Mom, death sucks, but I guess somebody has to do it. That's black humor, but it's funny.
And it gets you through. Yeah.
Deborah Morrison writes in this wonderful book talking about death that her father, who was a physician, lay dying in his bed at home, and the children were all gathered around on the floor watching reruns of a favorite family comedy and laughing. And
oh, that's great.
I can't think of a better way to leave this world than to the sound of my children's laughter.
Sounds good. You know, you also have in here letters, what you call like supplemental letters to the family, and reading through those and the different ones, those really can, you know, yes, we should all have the will and durable power of attorney and healthcare proxy, but it's important to have that personal connection and not just a legal document, isn't it?
Well, I would say yes, and you know this well. Documents are black and white. But lives are not black and white. Dying really isn't black and white. It's as much art as science. So the supplemental letter could be a video, and you don't have to be a good writer. It can be, you know, bullet points on a piece of scrap paper. Say, here's how I would like you to think about this when I'm in a healthcare crisis. I don't know what it's going to be like to die. I don't know what the situation's going to be. But here's the kind of thinking that I would use. If I'm absolutely terminal and there's no hope, then do this. If there's this kind of chance, do that. And then it's a place to write down, and I love you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, maybe the day before you snapped at your adult daughter because you didn't like the way her hair looked or whatever. This is your last chance to say, I love you. You've enriched my life so much, and I want you always to remember that. And then I think there's one other thing to say, at least it's something I said, which is, I know you've made the best decisions that you could. If in retrospect you think you made a mistake, I know you did the very best, and please let it go.
Susan Abel Lieberman, Ph.D., in conversation with Steve Wiseman. Her book is titled Death, Dying, and Dessert, Reflections and 20 Questions About Dying, published by Casa de Palabras. For more information, visit SusanLieberman.com. Steve Wiseman returns in a moment when A Touch of Grey continues.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and more conversation with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire, prolific writer, an expert on just about all the topics we cover on this program, and a man who stands between humanity and the scourge of scams. That's right, he's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and he has a website dedicated to fighting fraud. It's called Scamicide.com. Steve is here now to discuss the fine print in long-term care policies. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, I'm always saying there's nothing fine in fine print, and many insurance policies and contracts, unfortunately, are full of it. And they're full of fine print as well. And a lot of times people buy long-term care insurance to avoid burdening their families when they can't care for themselves. And you want this to be something that's going to be able to be effective and efficient and not a lot of problems. But unfortunately, what we're finding is a lot of the fine print in particularly older long-term care policies. And some of these companies who issued these policies aren't even still in business. But these policies are having, there's problems that people are occurring as they're trying to collect benefits. And remember, a lot of the people who are collecting benefits may be in their 80s or 90s. They may have bought these policies years ago, many years ago, decades ago. And they may have bought them at a time when the policies were written differently than that. A lot of insurers, too, have also left the business sometimes because they just didn't judge the economics of the industry well. Other times there was some out-and-out mispricing. But what forever reasons they did, it makes it more difficult as you're going against these third parties that are administering these policies where the companies have gotten out of the business. So that can make a problem. A lot of the times people still are looking to these top-rated insurers. And let me also say that for the most part, the insurers do a pretty good job. An estimated 264,000 people received long-term care benefits through long-term care insurance just last year, and $6.5 billion in benefits were paid. But the process to file a claim is pretty confusing. The periods of the deductibles, the waiting period or elimination period before your policy does kick in, those can be quite confusing. Also in regard to the eligibility and what it means to have require substantial assistance and what kind of records you have to show with that. Another interesting thing that it makes problems is many of these policies were written before the days of assisted living facilities came more into vogue. And so now the contract might not fit in with what it is with someone receiving benefits similar to what would be in a long-term care facility in a nursing home. The bottom line with all of this is a lot of these insurers are requiring just tremendous amounts of forms and documents, some of which weren't even referred to or required in the policy. So the best thing you can do is get some help with this, particularly if you're a senior. You can get a geriatric care manager, a lawyer, an accountant, a family member who's able to wade through all this fine print for you. Because the bottom line is the law is on your side, and particularly with these contracts, you're going to need someone to help you out.
Thank you, Steve. And as Steve says, there's nothing fine about the fine print. And he's telling us about the fine print in long-term care policies. Check out Scamicide.com for the scam of the day and the truth about avoiding scams, published by Prentice Hall by Steve Wiseman. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you very much to Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founding spirit of our program. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.